On your marks, get ready, shop!
Nothing haunts us women like the things we didn't buy. Today's show is brought to you by Target, otherwise known as Tarjay. Come on, what woman doesn't shop at Target? There's a lot going on the fourth week of March between the first day of spring, Purim, Good Friday, and Easter. Ooh, we're gonna celebrate with savings. But come on, ladies, let's keep it 100. Online shopping is the best. You know why? You can shop with no makeup, in a pair of shorts, and a cold ice glass of lemonade. Access the shopping link from my website, ninababel.com/podcast, and you're going to look for episode number 11, which gives you this week's store discounts at Target. Nation, welcome back to another episode of the Keep It 100 Girl Show, coming to you live and direct from Washington, D.C. I'm your hostess with the Keep It 100 Girl Mostess. It's Nina Babel. So as always, I keep it 100, I keep it real, I keep it true, and you know what makes me different? I use a sassy but classy TMI approach. But here is where women tell the truth, nothing but the truth, even if it's totally embarrassing or super cray-cray. So before we get started, last week's episode, I talked to single women and married couples about man chores. In all cases, our upbringing really had something to do with shaping our expectations around gender-based roles in the home. But in all cases, it was really interesting to see how women, independently of each other, felt like it was a man's job to take out the garbage. What do you think about that? Nevertheless, the modernization of chores has evolved to become a team effort. Couples now focus on expertise, what each person is good at, what each person likes or even dislikes. Makes total sense. Girly Nation, are you ready to keep it 100?
Yes, I'm ready to keep it 100.
I'm ready to keep it 100, girl.
You know I'm going to keep it 100.
My hand is raised. How about yours? Let's get this show on the road, sister. So today I had the most amazing opportunity to spotlight a social media influencer, and her name is Subi Zimmerman. This story is a true testament of my brand, the Keep It 100 Girl brand, of real women giving real advice. For the first time, unrehearsed, Sue is not talking about emojis and Instagram tips here, but she turns the mirror on herself, sharing publicly for the first time her personal struggles with bulimia. For those of you who are not familiar with Sue, she is known as the Instagram expert, founder of Insta Results, the world's first comprehensive online Instagram course, Ready, Set, Gram, which is a beginner Instagram course, and an author of a number one ebook called Instagram Basics for Your Business. She's a popular creative live instructor and a powerful speaker on prominent stages. Sue is passionate about teaching entrepreneurs, business executives, and marketing professionals how to leverage the power of Instagram to get tangible business results. Sue is a serial entrepreneur. This girl's had, listen up, over 18 businesses. Sue's mission is to teach, mentor, and empower others to be successful entrepreneurs as well. Here's the three biggest takeaways for this episode. No one's life is picture perfect. I mean, we all know this, but having any kind of mental illness, eating disorder, it all stems from your life not being picture perfect. Although these individuals use food or the lack of food to perpetuate this illness. According to the National Eating Disorders Association, do you realize eating disorders affect up to 30 million people in the US? That's like a third of our population. And two-thirds of that number, it's women. Lastly, you're gonna learn more about this illness. Sue is gonna identify the signs for any mother listening. If there's anyone out there listening for the first, second, or third time, girlfriend, I need your 5-star rating and review after you listen to any of my episodes, including this one, by clicking the ratings and reviews section in the iTunes or Stitcher app. Then this is what you're going to do. You're going to select 5 stars, you're going to title your review, and then write a description. I mean, that's easy breezy 1, 2, 3, right? I had had the pleasure to speak with this social media celebrity you know as the Instagram expert. And you could follow her at Sue B. Zimmerman. So oftentimes when we see posts on social media, everything has to be picture perfect. And people really hide behind their flaws. But Sue talks about her vulnerabilities and she reveals how she turned negatives into positives in her life. I took her back to a difficult place in her life starting at the age of 15, where Sue started with her battle with bulimia. For the first time, Sue opens up publicly about having and overcoming an eating disorder, which can be a difficult subject for any survivor to talk about. In addition to Sue, I interviewed Claire Misko, who's the CEO of the National Disorders Association, and throughout the episode, she will share her expert opinion, general overview of eating disorders, and treatment and recovery. The world is more visual than it ever was, especially with social media. The CEO of NIDA highlighted the complexity of an eating disorder and how it's connected to our expectations of perfection.
I mean, certainly eating disorders are about a lot more than just the food, the weight, and the eating disorder behaviors. There are very, very complex illnesses in the field. We call them biopsychosocial. So there's a lot of compelling evidence to show that some people might be genetically predisposed to developing eating disorders. And then there's the psychology, and a lot of people who struggle with eating disorders also struggle with other issues like anxiety, depression, low self-esteem. There are certain traits like perfectionism. Many people who struggle with eating disorders are very high achieving. They're very intelligent, motivated people, but they struggle with these illnesses. And then, you know, there's the sociocultural piece of it. We live in a culture that places an enormous and, I would say, toxic emphasis on weight and perfection. And so all of these different factors combined can lead to the development of eating disorders, and also it makes it very challenging to recover from an eating disorder in an environment where you're constantly surrounded by the message that thinness and perfection is sort of the way to achieve happiness and success and fulfillment. So it is very possible, and part of the recovery process is really dealing with a lot of those underlying issues. So yes, you absolutely have to address the behavior and you have to address the health issues, but you also have to deal with all of the other stuff that goes on. And, you know, I'm not a clinician. I don't treat people with eating disorders, but I talk to a lot of people who have personally struggled. I personally struggled myself. That's how I got into this field. And we also at the National Eating Disorders Association work with a lot of people who have family members or loved ones who are dealing with the recovery process. So this is very complex. Recovery is possible, but it takes work and it takes treatment and it takes sometimes a lot of time and reflection to deal with all of the issues that lead to eating disorders.
The thing with food is that you can't ignore it. Your body needs it. I mean, with most drugs, you can withdraw at least partially from a drug culture and being around the drug itself. But with food, people suffering from eating disorders have to face their demons every day because we need food. We don't need drugs, but we need food to sustain and fuel our bodies. So I want to frame up this conversation with some meaningful facts. According to the National Eating Disorder Association, in the United States, 20 million women and 10 million men suffer from a clinically significant eating disorder at some time in their life. This includes anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, or a binge eating disorder. Many individuals struggle with body dissatisfaction, right? We all do. We all could probably name a part of our body that we don't like. But interestingly enough, by the age of 6, girls especially are expected to start expressing concerns about their own weight or shape. And then that number grows. It grows to like 40 to 60% of elementary school girls between the ages of 6 to 12 are concerned. So we go from expressing concern now to being concerned about their weight or becoming too fat. I asked Sue about her demons and how she became bulimic, her battle, eventually her family relationships, and her recovery. So Sue, are you ready to keep it 100?
You know it, girlfriend.
So I asked Sue about her younger Sue B self, and she started with her camp story from when she was 15 years old.
But Sue, every woman does have a story to tell, and we would love to hear about younger Sue, her 20-year-old self Sue, or a teenage Sue?
Yeah, teenage Sue was a little screwed up. So I think a story that your listeners will really enjoy hearing is the story of me when I was at summer camp, 16 years old, and I was the jock at camp. I was the girl on the softball team. I was the best water skier for my age, and I was what you might call like a jock and somewhat popular, and I was never really fat. I was just athletic. And obviously when you go to summer camp, you learn a lot of things from all the girls that you're in a bunk with, and there was this obsession about chewing gum. Like, some of these girls were just chewing gum all the time. And then one day I asked one of the girls in the other bunk, like, why are you always chewing gum? She's like, because it prevents me from eating. I'm like, really? Bubble gum? Sugar? Mm-hmm. Does?
Yeah. Yeah.
What does it do? And she's like, well, I do this, and then I do that, and then sometimes when I eat too much food, I just make myself throw up, and it's the easiest way to lose weight. And I wasn't looking to lose weight. I wasn't feeling at the time badly about myself in that way. It was just something she put in my head at 16. Maybe I was 15. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, it would be kind of cool to lose 5 pounds. Like, that could be cool. So I just asked her, like, what she did, and I was curious, like any teenager would be.
Right.
And I don't know any teenage girl that doesn't think about their body image at some point of their life. So I started making myself throw up at camp, and it became an obsession, and it was awful. Not necessarily at camp being awful, but it's something I did for almost 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and so, again, I was not insecure. I was not looking for it. I had a boyfriend. I wasn't your typical bulimic. I guess it was just, at the end of the day, if I were to say what was it, I think it was self-esteem. And I think every teenager is challenged with their self-esteem. So I struggled through this. My mother was a nurse, and I came home after camp, and I lived looking for bathrooms. Like, my focus, my brain was on finding bathrooms. And, you know, I'd come home from school, my mother would buy Dunkin' Donuts. I remember that so vividly. And I'd eat one, then I'd eat two, then I'd eat three, knowing that I could purge. And my mother might ask, like, why are all the donuts gone? I'm like, oh, they were stale. Or, you know, I'd always come up with some excuse of what happened to the coffee cake or the puddings that she made being disappeared. So my mother questioned it, but she never really thought anything of it until I think one day she smelled the bathroom after I went and knew that I had a problem. And so she confronted me, and I ended up getting help. It was like the first time I ever had any therapy, and it was fine, but it didn't solve the obsession I had. I just knew that I could always fall back on making myself throw up if I wanted to lose weight. And I never got thin. I never got thin, but I definitely got scars on my knuckles. And parents, take note that if you're questioning if your child is bulimic, they have scars on their knuckles from making themselves throw up with their fingers.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I had scars on my knuckles, it was an obsession. I didn't do it all the time, because when I felt like I was in control and eating quote unquote healthy, which was like diet like stuff, like, you know, stupid things like soup diets and laxatives, and like, I was a mess. But I managed to get through my high school years. I was on the ski team. I was on the field hockey team. I was on the softball team. I had friends. I had a boyfriend. Like, everyone thought I was like happy-go-lucky, nothing wrong with Sue.
So this just backs up the fact that we're so impressionable at a very early age. And for Sue, this lasted for 4 years. Sue made a valid point, though. Women, we have self-esteem issues. And we try to retrofit our body image into like thinking or wanting to look like somebody else. There's a social pressure for thinness. The thin ideal is what women aspire to. And there's this dieting, fasting that has a negative effect. Sue mentioned some key signs that she experienced while she was going through bulimia. One is the whole losing weight. One is the throwing up, making herself throw up. And then it's the scars on her knuckles from making herself throw up. Misko, the CEO of NIDA, drew much attention to the fact that there are cases of eating disorders that start as early as 7 years old, but she indicates adolescence is usually the trigger age.
That's very common. Adolescence is sort of the prime time, although unfortunately we're hearing from parents of children as young as seven who are exhibiting signs of disordered eating. So this is starting to affect younger and younger children. And it's important to also note that, you know, while we do hear mostly about, you know, adolescents, teen girls, particularly struggling with eating disorders, these are illnesses that affect people of all ages. So we're hearing from women and men of all ages who have been struggling. Either they developed the eating disorder as an adolescent or a child and then were never treated and continued the behavior on into adulthood. And sometimes there can even be a later onset of eating disorder behavior, which is typically connected to major life changes, you know, going through a divorce or caring for aging parents or a major move or children moving out of the house to go to college. You know, these are major, major life changes that can sometimes trigger eating disorders. We also hear from a lot of women who are really, really struggling with the aging process. And sometimes that can also be connected to disordered eating behavior. So it's important, although we tend to mostly see eating disorders reflected in the media as a young women's issue, that these illnesses don't discriminate. So there's a particular picture that doesn't really reflect the reality of who struggles with these illnesses.
The recurrent binge and purge cycles of bulimia can really affect your digestive system when you think about it, and lead to imbalances in your body that affect your heart or even other major organ functions. According to the National Eating Disorder Association, there are serious health consequences. So now Sue's graduated and she's off to college. She then explains how she managed her eating disorder while she was in college.
I went off to college. So Nina, I ended up studying nutrition thinking it was going to solve my problems. Thinking that, oh my God, if I can understand more about food, and why am I so friggin' obsessed about food? This right. is crazy. Why am I spending so much time of my life thinking about food? Well, hello, everybody. We eat at least three meals a day and have snacks, and it's on your mind. And, you know, I didn't learn to fuel my body with fuel when I was hungry. It was all psychological and always a struggle. So I went off to college. I studied nutrition at Simmons College in Boston, which is a prominent school with a great nutrition program. But I studied it for all the wrong reasons because I was really just trying to figure my shit out. And I was not like a science student. I had to take biochem over.
Okay.
Like, that shit was hard.
Right.
So I'm like, what am I studying nutrition for?
Right.
So I got a minor in graphic arts. And even in college, like, I was definitely hustling my hand-painted clothing and selling some of my wares because I have always been that entrepreneur, but I'm still struggling with my weight and my issues around food. And oh my God, put yourself in an all-woman school and there you go. It's escalated
right.
even more. So it was just a problem. And then I think my freshman year of college, I lost all the weight I had gained. I got down to like 116 pounds, which is so little for me. I'm an athletic frame, even though I'm 5'1 and a half. And, you know, I did like one of these weight loss programs, like not Jenny Craig, but I did Jenny Craig later, but something like something my mother went to exercise. I forget the name. And I went and I dedicated that summer before, after college, after gaining all that weight my freshman year, because I did end up gaining weight, to lose it. So I lost it all, went back to college and thought I was okay. But then all the crazy things that come with being surrounded by women at an all-women school who
right.
are just obsessed about everything. It
right.
just came back to haunt me in a big, ugly way. So I ended up struggling to get through school because, number one, I was studying the wrong thing for what I really should have been studying. I should have been studying business or entrepreneurship or something in this creative space that I'm in now. I ended up graduating and I ended up going with my college roommate to Virginia Beach, Virginia. I had a job lined up as the creative person that was going to help market this handmade ice cream business called Fat Richards.
Next, Sue talks about her entrepreneurial journey and where it all started after college, and how this was a groundbreaking event that took her focus off food and started to boost her confidence.
But the problem is what he told me he was going to pay me before I got there, and what he told me he'd pay me when I got there, was two different things. So I'm like, fuck you. I'm out of here.
Deuces.
I'm creative. I'm going to figure out my own shit because I don't need this job. I'm going to waitress and I'm going to hand paint my wares like I was in college, and I'm going to make some money doing what I love. So this is how it all started, Nina. I ended up renting a push cart at the waterside in Norfolk, Virginia, and it was called Color Me, and it was hand-painting clothing. I was like Rapunzel. At night, I was hand-painting baby sneakers and hats and overalls and you name it. This gal was painting and painting and painting. And
wow.
Then I was waitressing to pay for all my bills because, hello, how was I paying for my bill?
Right.
But then I started selling what I was making on the push cart, and that validation of being of some kind of worth, like personal worth, like, and having focus doing what I loved really took my mind off of the food and the issues around the food. I started feeling really good every day, working, loving the fact that people were purchasing what I was creating. It was building my confidence. I grew very, very quickly. I ended up getting a business partner who helped me hand paint clothing for the cart. We ended up hand painting boxer shorts. That was my idea. And we couldn't keep up with the demand. And so my business partner, Michael, and I turned the name Color Me to Boxer Rebellion. And that was my first $1 million business.
Wow.
And that was the year that all my eating issues went
away.
Sue describes her diet when she was bulimic and how that relationship with food improved. She uses two key words here, self-worth and validation. Listen to how she uses them.
Was there just something missing? Like all of a sudden, your confidence level from having the business, not being in nutrition, you were getting that level of satisfaction you weren't getting when you were in your teens and
yeah, it's the self-worth of knowing that you can make an impact in the world. And my impact at that time was seeing smiling customers walk away wearing what I was creating. And the validation of creating was huge for me psychologically. And then I started to slowly have a good relationship with food and only eat when I was hungry and try to fuel with food that was healthier. Because when you're dieting and you're learning how to diet, like Diet Coke and Lipton soup all day long with the sodium and the chemicals up the wazoo, like you name it, I was eating what I thought was diet food, but was like empty calories and not fueling me with what my brain needed to function properly.
Right.
And that's why today I share so much of who I am today via Snapchat, like my healthy little tips and the ways that I fuel to stay top of my game as a successful entrepreneur. But it didn't come overnight. And you heard me say I'm a nutrition major.
Right.
And I think all nutrition majors are totally screwed up at first. I mean, I shouldn't make that as a blanket statement, but I should say that many people in my nutrition course at school, at Simmons, had eating disorders or eating issues. And
people
that I know that are dietitians or sharing this space have had some personal issues that got them in this space because they wanted to help other people not have those same issues.
I asked Sue about her behaviors when she was bulimic and if her daughters knew about her an eating disorder.
So, and you never got caught. No one caught you that whole time.
I was so good at finding the bathrooms and flushing the toilet and waiting for people to leave and lying. Like, it was awful. The deceit, the lies, the food. I never stole anything. You know, I never got desperate like that. But it was the worst time of my life in terms of feeling like crap and not having the self-confidence. But on the outside, everyone thought I was totally fine. And so telling this story, you know, I shared it with my daughter when we were in Belize recently. Was that where we were? One of our vacations. And we were walking on the beach. And as you know, Lila, Fresh Fit and Fearless, is really into healthy eating the right way and has never had a food issue. And I swore when I had kids, specifically when I had three daughters, I would never use the word fat and I would never say the word diet ever to them because I didn't ever want them to think they were being judged or that diet diet's such a negative word. It's awful. It means that you're doing something for a period of time to get results that you think you need for an event versus a lifestyle change. So I ended up sharing this with Lila, and she was really surprised and shocked, but not like she really appreciated that I shared it with her, but it kind of made sense to her because she knows that I'm constantly talking about healthy eating and fueling and try to be an example. In their later years, of course, they were living on McDonald's and chicken nuggets because that's what they loved. I wasn't obsessed about fueling
every kid
them.
Does, right? Yeah. But at least she had the backstory now, right? She understood your being.
Yeah. I mean, I just didn't share it with my daughters until it was the right time. And maybe they're going to listen to this at some point in their lives. It's not a conversation that I just openly have. I've shared it with people that are really close to me. This is the first time I'm really diving deep and keeping it 100% real, because I think that so many teenagers have issues because of the way their parents talk to them. And my husband has never, ever, ever once said anything about how they look. Those pants are tight on you. Do not go out in those. Did you gain weight? It looks like you put on some weight at camp. Never, ever, ever, because those words scar.
They do.
Especially girls from their fathers. And those are the daughters that have issues. When the mothers have issues and the fathers especially say something, they question how they look and they want to please their parents, especially young teenage girls pleasing their fathers. So I knew well enough not to psychologically damage my daughters. And I was very, very conscious of, even when I was trying to lose weight, to never wake up and say, oh my God, I feel so fat today. I need to lose 5 pounds.
Mm-hmm, right.
Never, ever, ever said any of that.
Whew, that's a big one. Psychological damage. You know, parents, relatives, friends, we always have this habit of telling each other when we either gain too much weight or we're losing. I mean, I can certainly relate to feeling self-conscious, and it never really went away until I knew the next time I saw them, I knew I had to be looking good just to avoid any kind of commentary. And once I didn't get any commentary, then I knew I had some level of approval, right? That I met their level of approval, and essentially they were telling me I look good. And if they told me I looked good, then that was just validation of my self-worth that it worked. Whatever I did is working. Sue indicates it's important to share. People always comment, you're perfect, you do everything perfect. But she really wants to emphasize that she's not.
Yeah, I think it's important to share it. I'm happy to be sharing it because now that I'm an influencer online and, you know, everyone looks at me and like, okay, Sue, what didn't you do?
Right.
Everyone thinks they put me on this pedestal like, okay, you had 18 businesses and you're, you know, the Instagram expert and you have a successful business. Like, what didn't you do? I'm like, I had issues just like many other people. And this is an issue that I don't want any young teenage girl to have. I know that you're attracting primarily 20 plus year olds on here that are mothers or will be mothers. And I really want the message to be, it's so important to teach that food is fuel. And it's the way that you honor your body with the best fuel, just as you would fill your car with the best gas to run your day, you know, run your life as effectively, efficiently, and as best that you can. And that is the message I want the listeners to have, and also to be very aware if anyone has daughters that they're just wondering if they're telling the whole truth and nothing but the truth, you know, and then to look at their knuckles if they're suspecting. It's lying. It's lying about food things. It's seeing, you know, eating a ton of food when you're not used to seeing your kids eat that way or your teens eat that way. And then haven't seen them eat a lot like a couple hours later. And then knowing that they're going off to the bathroom frequently. Those are the signs.
I asked the CEO of NIDA to highlight the latest behavioral trend that the association is noticing with eating disorders.
I would say that there are a couple of issues that have been coming up that we hear about a lot at the National Eating Disorders Association. You know, right now we're at this cultural moment where there's really an obsession with health. And I put that health in air quotes. So we're hearing from a lot of people who are engaging in very disordered eating behavior and using healthy eating as basically a mask for disordered eating behavior. So, you know, we hear about fasting, we hear about clean eating, we hear about people who are really obsessed with the purity of food and that is actually fueling and, you know, keeping them caught up in a very dangerous cycle. There is a term for this. It's not a diagnostic term, but it's one that we hear a lot in the field called orthorexia. And that basically describes that obsession with a certain type of eating, clean, pure, fear of eating a certain way, but it can be very, very dangerous and has serious health consequences. So that's something that it's important to be aware of. If you or someone you know is starting to find that your thoughts and behaviors around food and exercise are becoming obsessive and that you have a fear related to eating or a fear around not exercising, or you're pushing yourself beyond a certain point where it's healthy, that's enough of a sign to reach out for help. And, you know, one of the most common things I hear is people asking, well, I'm not sure if this is an eating disorder, but, and then they go on to describe how their thoughts and behaviors around food and weight are making it difficult for them to enjoy life. And if that's the case, that's enough of a sign. And in fact, early intervention is so, so critical with eating disorders. The longer you go on with this behavior and the more entrenched the thoughts and behaviors are, the harder eating disorders are to treat. So we really strongly encourage, if you or someone you know is getting concerned that thoughts and behaviors around food and weight are becoming problematic, get some help. Because if you can get help at an earlier stage, the treatment is much, much more effective.
So according to the National Eating Disorder Association, there are three prevalent symptoms to look for. One is their frequent episodes of consuming very large amount of food followed by behaviors to prevent weight gain, such as self-induced vomiting. Number two, a feeling of being out of control during these binge eating episodes. And then number three, self-esteem overly related to body image. I asked Sue, how did you function day to day without brain fuel? I mean, how did you study without the proper nutrition and manage to graduate?
Oh my God, my mindset was all fucked up. And this is partly why I was not a great, stellar student in college. And I feel like my school cost a lot of money. My parents, I'm fortunate, my parents paid for it. And so I feel like I did not process and consume my education as well as I should have and retain that. And so I doubted like what my future would be like because I really felt like I didn't figure it out in college. And I feel so fortunate that I went with my gut feeling and started that first business. And it really is Boxer Rebellion that gave me the entrepreneurial mindset to do what I love and follow my passion in a big way. And that set me up for my successes thereafter. But that never would have happened if I didn't say screw you to the guy that didn't pay me the money for the first. I didn't have a business plan. I did what I wanted to do.
Sue now describes her experience with therapy. But it's important to note, Sue is an exception to this rule with curing her own disease in her own way.
Well, take me back to therapy, though. I mean, for those parents who have just discovered their daughter having a disorder and using, is therapy the right solution?
I don't know if it's the right solution. All I remember is going in college and sitting with this therapist who was trying to convince me that peanut butter was not good, and she tried to get me to think about all baked goods. She's like, whenever you think of having baked goods, think that there's bugs in them. Like, she did all this like shocking therapeutic stuff. So I didn't love the therapy. My therapy came from myself and from after having my three daughters and gaining 50 pounds when I had Amanda and losing it, and gaining 50 pounds when I had the twins and losing it, and finally honoring my body and saying, okay, this is your one and only body. Take care of it, because if you want to be healthy, you've got to take care of it. So I have always been the person that exercises. You heard me say that I was a jock and an athlete, and exercising was never my problem. It was always, how can I improve? Even now, every day, how can I improve what nutrients I'm putting in my body? Which ones should I take away? And, you know, like 2 months ago, Nina, I stopped chewing gum. I used to chew gum all the time. And it was sugarless gum and had chemicals in it. And I just decided that, you know, this can't be great for me. It's not good for my teeth. It's not a great habit. And I went cold turkey, gave up the gum. I didn't replace it with anything. I'm not a coffee drinker. I'm not a hard candy sucker. I just slowly like stopped doing lattes at Starbucks and started doing tea. Will I drink coffee? Sure. I'll have one every now and again. But I'm always looking at little incremental ways to be healthier. Right. And so when people try to do it all at once, I think that's when you fail. And for me, it's just like, what can I do today a little bit better than yesterday that's going to make me feel good, that's going to really make me feel good? And right. So I'm always saying that to myself every day.
And that's a good message for everybody, is to find what makes you feel good and those food items that make you feel good. And you're allowed to cheat.
Yeah, and I don't think people should think about it as cheating. I think you should think about it as, you know, if this is what you want, eat it. I would eat the whole friggin' cake. Now I just take a bite or two, because all I really need to do is taste it and know that that cake's going to be there the next day and the next day and the next day. And it's not going to go away.
Right.
So you don't have to gorge as if it's the last day on earth. However, when I'm old and in my 90s, I'll be chowing on that ice cream.
The CEO of NIDA highlights the importance of getting connected to help as early as possible and outlines the recommended steps.
Well, step one is definitely to reach out for help. And with eating disorders, you really need to connect with someone who has experience working with eating disorders. Again, these are complex illnesses. They are treatable, but it's important to find the right kind of treatment. And so, you know, a starting point certainly would be to contact the National Eating Disorders Association. We have a helpline, and we have trained volunteers who can find resources in your community. So that certainly is step one. If you are supporting someone or you're concerned about someone who might have an eating disorder or be veering into troubling behavior, it's really important to educate yourself. Find out as much as you can about eating disorders. Approach that person in a caring and compassionate, non-judgmental way, but be direct and express your concern and offer to help. Offer to help connect that person with treatment. Find out what options might be available in the area. But, you know, it's really, really important to understand that eating disorders don't just disappear on their own. They are treatable, but it's important to get connected to help.
So people with eating disorders need to seek professional help. Early diagnosis and intervention significantly enhance the recovery, because eating disorders can be chronic, debilitating, and life-threatening. Typically, this would consist of a team. Right? It would be your licensed professionals, such as a psychologist, psychiatrist, social worker, nutritionist, and your medical doctor. Want to keep it 100 with Nina on a daily? Well, you can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, and Facebook. You're going to use @NinaBabel. For more podcast updates, head on over to ninababel.com/subscribe for my favorite tips and tricks. Sue explains, despite being an influencer, she is not perfect, and she has a personal message directed to women in their 20s, and even their mothers.
Is what advice you would give a girl in her 20s, and take into account, you know, everything in your 20s to now as a successful influencer, what would you have to tell them?
Yeah, so for me, it's really, you know, not giving a shit what people think about you and doing what you feel is the best for you. And that's hard when you have a best friend or you're really close to your family and they're not buying into what you want to be doing. I think, and you know, I have a 24-year-old daughter that's kind of going through this right now in terms of finding the perfect place for her career, and I know that she's going to crush it and rock her greatness, and I think it's important for you to follow the thing that makes your heart beat, that you just can't wait to bounce out of bed to do. Like, I literally can't wait to start a new day. There are so many people that I want to help in this world that need my help, and I want to touch them and reach them any way I can, whether it's on Snapchat, Periscope, Instagram, Twitter, on stage, you name it. I want to help other people have success in their business and make more money doing what they love. And that's my why. And I know that that is so clear to me. And that's the legacy that I want to leave behind. And it feels so good. And so when you're in your 20s, my advice is to just follow that. And yes, sometimes you need to take the job to pay for the bills, to pay for the debt of college. And I say hustle. Like, when I was in my 20s, let me tell you something, folks, I was working 24/7. Like, this, like, let's take it easy and go off and do a yoga workout. Like, that didn't really happen for me. But I think it's important to have work-life balance. I wish I had more work-life balance, but because I hustled my little hiney off, I think it really helped me get to that next place where I wanted to be.
Sue has already shared the signs of bulimia based on her own experiences. Next, the CEO of Nita not only shares her expert opinion, but she also felt it was necessary to mention real-life stories from parents.
Well, I would say to take any kind of comments about dieting or negative body image very seriously. We hear from a lot of parents who, looking back, say, you know, I thought it was just a phase. I thought all the girls that age are dieting and talking about not liking their bodies. I didn't think it was a big deal. So again, if you start hearing your child expressing either a desire to go on a diet, restricting food, or eating secretively, or having any kind of shame or fear around food or body image, take that seriously. Talk to your child's doctor about it and, you know, make sure that you do start educating yourself. It's really, really important to not dismiss this. And again, going back to the earlier point about early intervention, if you can get your child into treatment early, that's the point where it can be most effective. So I would, again, really, really encourage parents to take those early signs seriously. You know, and another thing that we're hearing about a lot, unfortunately, at the National Eating Disorders Association is we're at this point where there's a lot of talk about obesity and obesity prevention. Unfortunately, a lot of these very well-intentioned programs that are being implemented in schools are very focused on weight, and they have kids being weighed at school. There is a lot of talk about body mass index and good foods and bad foods. And again, while these programs are well-intentioned, what we're hearing about is that they're really backfiring, that a lot of kids and a lot of parents we hear from are citing those programs as the start of when their children or when they themselves started to become very anxious about food and weight gain, that sometimes it can trigger bullying. You know, the kids start comparing numbers. So, you know, I think it's important, particularly for parents, to really be aware of what kinds of messages are being sent to kids about food and weight through their schools. And it's an opportunity to start that conversation. Of course, it's important for kids to learn about healthy eating and exercise, but those conversations should be framed in a way where we really are talking about health and holistic health, and we're taking the focus away from the number on the scale or the size of a person's body, that it really is about all these other factors that are much more accurate measures of true health. So that's another thing that I would encourage parents to be aware of. There are a lot of messages that are coming out of schools that can, unfortunately, be very confusing for kids about food and weight. The most important thing is to give kids a way of thinking about health that's holistic, that healthy foods are about what makes your body feel good, what gives you energy, you know, what exercise is fun and makes your body feel good and strong. So we're talking in those kinds of terms as opposed to a number on a scale or what food is good and what food is bad, and, you know, that it's not fear-based, that it's all about talking about in terms of strength and movement and real, you know, again, really looking at it in a holistic way. You know, the reality is that there is a range of body types that exist naturally in the world. So you want to be able to embrace diversity of size and also talk about food and weight in a way that's not fear and shame based. And that's what we're trying to encourage. No one is ever motivated towards healthy behavior by shame. So, you know, when you're starting from that point of feeling ashamed of who you are and what you look like, that's not a motivator for healthy behavior. And we know that. And we know that when kids feel ashamed, they're more likely to engage in eating disorder behavior, whether that's restriction or binging or purging, you know, the whole range of eating disorder behavior. So we have to make kids feel good about who they are and start from a place of self-acceptance.
You know, you kind of hit a nail on the head when you just said that, because I reflect back to my own experiences, and, you know, your family has a tendency to tell you when you put on weight or you look too small, but most cases always when you put on weight. And that always used to kind of put me on guard, like, okay, well, the next time you see me, you won't be able to say anything because I'll be looking
fine. So I took whatever mm-hmm. measures to make sure that they didn't say that a second time. You know, and I don't know if that could be categorized as anything because it wasn't severe. Like, I love food and I eat. But that kind of put me on my toes to say, okay, well, if I have to like take out carbs or not eat sugar, whatever it takes, so that the next time they see me, you know, I'm going to feel good about myself. Because at that point, I did not feel good. And I think most people could relate at a minimum to that mm-hmm. story.
And there's so much of that, too. And I think, you know, that's also when we talk about eating disorders and there's a particular picture and the media tends to cover eating disorders in a very narrow way, in that there's a picture in everyone's mind of who struggles with eating disorders. And it's usually a young, white, underweight woman. And that is not really reflective of the numbers of people who struggle with these issues. And media coverage also tends to focus on the most extreme cases. And I do want to stress that eating disorders are very, very serious illnesses, and they have the highest mortality rate of any psychiatric diagnosis. So these can be deadly illnesses. There are millions of people who might not fit the diagnostic criteria for anorexia, bulimia, or binge eating disorder, but they're in what we call sub-threshold. So their behaviors and their thoughts around food, weight, body image are having a really negative effect in their lives. It might not be a constant, everyday kind of thing, or it might be, but it still is affecting their ability to enjoy life. They might be restricting. They might be withdrawing from certain social situations because they don't want to be around food. And so if any of these things are going on, it's really important to reach out for help and to say, look, you know, you might not fit into the picture of what we see as eating disorders, but that doesn't mean that you don't deserve help, deserve to be healthy and happy in life and feel good about who you are.
Let's get to know Sue on a personal level. More about her family, how she raises her daughter as a mother who had an eating disorder, her upbringing, and what she loves and her way forward.
You know, my husband worries more than I do about my daughters. My daughters are amazing. They are fiercely independent. They have never cut themselves. They've never had abusive relationships. They never been anorexic or bulimic or have had weight issues that have like held them back from what they want to do with their life. And they have amazing friends and they're very close. And I feel like I've done my job as a mother to raise these fiercely independent girls that don't need me every day. Right. They're not texting me and asking me how to do things or figure things out. Of course I'm there for them and they're in touch with me, but it's not like they don't need me to help them make decisions. And I feel like that is the true blessing of raising your children as a parent, is when you've done a good job and they can go off on their own and be independent.
What are you like as a mother?
Oh my God, you would have loved me as a mother. I have videos I'll have to show you sometime. I was the mother who, I had the best birthday parties for my kids because I'm so creative. So I went above and beyond doing the quintessential party, and I lived for their birthday parties because then I could just go all out. I taught camp in my backyard. I taught art classes in the basement so that I could be with them. I taught them that when we go to the Wellesley dump and we take things, we can turn them into other things. Like, I am a crafter, a creator. We used to color and doodle, and I used to get shells and rocks and paint them with them. I love play dates and taking them everywhere. My job was being 24/7 a mother, but I always had a side hustle. I always had that freaking side hustle, Nina, because to be honest, my kids drove me crazy. Like, three daughters, twins, they were fighting 24/7. I remember saying to my husband, do you think we're ever going to live a day where one of our kids don't cry? Like, let's mark this on the calendar. How old are they going to be when someone doesn't cry? I think it was when the twins were maybe 8.
Wow.
So someone always always had something going on. And, you know, whether Amanda was instigating or Lila and Kara were fighting, there was just stuff. So I loved, loved, loved being a mother. And I still love being a mother to adults now. It was just like, they were delicious. They were adorable. I loved dressing them. I loved being with them and playing with them and teaching them how to rollerblade and how to skate and ski. Like, it was awesome.
So how was that different to your upbringing or the same?
Very different. My parents, my dad worked 24/7 except for Sundays. So I spent my time with him at his automobile store. And that's where I learned a lot about entrepreneurship and hard work. My mother was a nurse, and so they definitely hustled. We grew up in Andover, Massachusetts, which was, you know, a very well-off community. I had a great childhood, and I have an older sister, a younger brother. My parents didn't really play with us. They didn't really, I don't have profound memories of my parents reading to me, to be honest. And like, I'm sure they did. I just don't have that book that my mom read me that I remember, or my dad, you know, it's just, I don't remember that. And that bothers me.
Right.
So I made sure that that didn't happen with my daughters. We didn't do a lot of cultural trips. We went to Disney and Storyland, and, you know, we did ski in Austria, but I don't remember like cultural focus. And my husband comes from a strong cultural background with going to museums and the opera and the symphony and travel. And so, you know, here's the thing. You don't know what you don't have till you have, till you see someone has it.
Right.
And so I didn't ever question my upbringing as being, I wish it was more, until I married my husband and I saw what his family did and their values. And so when I saw their values and I liked their values, then I incorporated them into my family.
We all have regrets. Sue regrets abusing her body and not taking full advantage of college. We all could beat ourselves up for it, but I wanted to find out specifically from Sue the importance of transitioning your life from a negative to a positive and then owning it.
Yeah, I mean, I really regret that I kind of wasted my focus, brain power in college on this stupid thing called weight. It really sucks because I could have learned so much more about business. So I kind of, you know, gave, like, my MBA is in entrepreneurship and
right.
the hustle of doing what I've done. I mean, other than that, I don't have any strong regrets. I live my life full on every day, and I am so glad that I'm an empty nester now. I can wake up and do whatever the frig I want every day. I really feel like I've come into a really great place in my life, running a business with amazing partners and a team, and I get to travel and
right.
speak and teach and mentor and coach, and I have such a variety of things going on that adds so much richness to every single day.
Right, and that's something when you were 20-something, who would have thought, right?
You never know what's coming down the pike. And so here's the thing. I have always been very nimble. I've been able to morph into the next opportunity. I don't sweat the small stuff. I'm not a perfectionist. I get excited about new ideas, and I go with what I think is the best thing to do. And usually that has brought a business, an opportunity, and some serious income.
So what are your faults?
Ask Morgan and Rachel.
What's your weaknesses?
I think acting quickly and not processing and thinking and just pondering. I am definitely, oh my God, that's such a great idea. I gotta do it now.
Okay.
It's like, Sue, friggin' chill, process, take a deep breath. Don't respond to the email right now. Don't say yes. Is it really the right decision for us? I respond to opportunities very quickly because I see them as opportunities, and I don't see them as missed opportunities where sometimes it's an opportunity cost when you say yes to something and you could have been doing something else that would have got you something different. So time management in that regard, I'm really good at punching through my whole to-do list every day. I'm not extremely systematic with how I get through my day. I'm working on processes and systems, and that's an area that I'm always looking to improve in.
So that's the business side of you. How about the personal side?
Yeah, so I definitely, I bought some new art supplies, and I'm starting to bring the Subi artist back. Instead of spending all my time online, I bought real markers and calligraphy markers, and I'm going to start doing going to start creating my own quotes and sharing them on Instagram because I am an artist at heart. So I haven't really been picking up the brush or the marker or the utensils to create and craft. So I'm trying to make more time for that. I really want to shut things down and pick up books more or listen to Audible. I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I haven't been an avid reader, and I really want to commit to at least one book a month, like not one book a week. That's too ambitious for my brain. And then also, I mean, lastly, like travel. Like I love travel, and I will always spend money and take time to travel. And so to me, when you can see more of the world,
you grow
and you live a richer life, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, exactly.
This has been a complete 360 for Sue. Not everyone is as fortunate. Sue has learned to manage through it, and she refers to this psychological head thing as being gone.
I know a lot of basket cases, and I know a lot of people that never recovered from it. I feel really fortunate that the psychological issues of eating are completely gone as far as I'm concerned. I enjoy food. I look forward to food. I can't wait to eat the next healthy thing when my body's asking for it. Like, totally 360 for me. And I think there's a big movement now, like really teaching the facts behind food. And, you know, the more you can eat the whole food and nothing but the whole food, the healthier you feel, the better your skin feels, the better, you know, just the health behind eating unprocessed food is really out in the forefront now. And it didn't used to be.
But how do you train your body to like start enjoying it? Because you would just eat it and throw it up. Was there any enjoyment while you were doing that?
Not yes and no. It's like the enjoyment of feeling like you're getting away with something.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a whole psychological head thing going on. And it wasn't every single meal. Because if I felt like I ate healthy, that was fine. It's the minute I would have one bite of a cookie and then eat the whole cookie. And then I'd be like, screw it. I just ate a cookie. I'm going to eat five more. It's that whole kind of like stop after you've enjoyed it and put it down. And so that's when the problem was. It wasn't every single meal by any means. I would have been like in the hospital for that. But clearly when the guilt set in because I feel like I cheated from my diet, that's when it was problematic. And that's why I hate the word diet.
So I'm going to go a little deeper for a sec because what did it take for you to make yourself throw up? Was it hard at first and then just got easier?
Yeah, it really, honestly, Nina, I didn't even think about it. It never passed my brain until I heard it at camp when I was 15. It was just not even something I was thinking about. And so parents, take notice. It can just be that easy. And yeah, at first it was hard. I'm like, oh my God, who likes to purge? Like, this is just disgusting. It's the most vulnerable position you can be in your life. And so the better you got at it, the more you knew what to do. Like, there's a whole little kind of like, I got this. I've mastered this. I got this. There's control behind it. There's a whole control behind it. It's a sickness. It really is. And that's why it's a psychological disorder. And so young girls and even adults, I mean, I know 40-year-old women that suffer from it. It's, you know, people that feel like their whole presence, their whole being is being judged on how they look. And that's a problem in our society. I mean, that's a bigger problem. That's probably for another guest for you to have on, but that's not my specialty, but I just know it. I know it because a lot of people say to me, how are you so confident to get on stage and do what you do? And, you know, I wasn't planning on being on stage as a speaker. I just love that I'm changing people's lives and I'm actually having fun doing it. It became something I enjoyed. But I know getting on stage, everyone's looking at you. They're looking at your outfit. They're looking at your shoes. They're looking at your hair. They're looking at your makeup. I mean, talk about like being on stage, even at Creative Live. I mean, it's just like you get scrutinized. I know how to have a presence, you know, a positive presence. And the person that you see on stage is the person that you see in person. And I know now, like, I'm so comfortable being me that I'm the real deal. And, you know, some people don't have that confidence.
Right. Well, again, thank you, Sue, for sharing your confidence, your story, and helping women that are in the same position, no matter what age they are.
Eating disorders are very complex conditions, and they arise from a combination of longstanding behavioral, biological, emotional, psychological, interpersonal, and social factors. Most of the time, they're solely associated with food, weight preoccupations, but they are complex diseases with a variety of causes. So to recap, as a mother and a daughter, Sue gave you both sides of her story and her battle with bulimia. In today's world, we have so much more influences beyond our reach, beyond our families and even friends. Sue lives in a world of social media and teaching entrepreneurs. I'm going to turn the tables now by talking to Claire Misko, CEO of the National Disorders Association, as she shares her expert opinion and general overview on eating disorders.
Well, treatment looks different for different people, but certainly, again, these are complex illnesses. They do have, you know, there are medical issues involved, and then there are also the psychological issues involved. Many eating disorders can be treated very effectively on an outpatient basis, so with counseling, sometimes nutritional counseling can be helpful as well. And then there are different levels of care depending on the severity of the eating disorder. So some people do require more intensive treatment, residential or intensive outpatient treatment. There are different types of treatment depending on where you are in your process. But again, if you can reach out at an early stage, many eating disorders at that point can be treated on an outpatient basis.
Bulimia nervosa is a serious, potentially life-threatening eating disorder, characterized by a cycle of binging and other behaviors such as self-induced vomiting, as you've heard from Sue, just to undo or just compensate for the effects of all that binge eating. As you heard, Sue indicated what she felt were the signs due to her own experiences, which are in total alignment with the National Eating Disorder Association. I'm going to list 10 symptoms, and you're going to be shocked to hear how Sue has demonstrated more than half of them. So number one, evidence of binge eating, including the disappearance of large amounts of food in short periods of time, or finding wrappers and containers indicating the consumption of large amounts of food. Well, if you remember, Sue would eat donuts and french fries from McDonald's. Number two, evidence of purging behaviors, including frequent trips to the bathroom after meals, signs and/or smells of vomiting, presence of wrappers or packages of laxatives or diuretics. Sue used to purge after eating and made frequent trips to the bathroom. Number three, excessive rigid exercise regimen. Well, you heard Sue referencing she's an athlete. She always has been an athlete. But therein lies that psychological connection, right? You're eating, you're binging, but yet you're exercising just as a validation that, you know, I'm healthy and I'm making sure that I'm healthy. Number four, unusual swelling of the cheeks or jaw area. Number five, calluses on the back of the hands and knuckles from self-induced vomiting. So again, Sue did reference that one of the signs for any mother is to look at the knuckles of their daughters or sons, and that would indicate there's some kind of self-induced vomiting happening. Number six, discoloration or staining of the teeth. Number seven, creation of a lifestyle schedule or ritual to make time for a binge and purge session. Well, that's how Sue operated. She always binged and she purged no matter what she ate. Number eight, withdrawal from usual friends and activities. Number nine, in general, behaviors and attitudes indicating that weight loss, dieting, and control of food are becoming primary concerns. From the age of 15 years old, Sue was introduced to bulimia as a way of losing unwanted weight. Number 10, continued exercise despite injury. Sue has always referenced herself as an athlete, and even to this day, exercise is a part of her routine. But more importantly, when she was battling bulimia, there was this kind of yo-yo and balance of scales between binging and purging and exercising. In order to get a first-hand understanding of recovery, there is no one type of treatment since eating disorders involve both medical and psychological elements that need to be considered.
I did struggle with an eating disorder, and that was something that started in middle school as a diet. And unfortunately, we hear that a lot. It's a very, very common story of the initial obsession around food and weight being triggered by dieting. And that diet spiraled into more serious behavior, which went on through my teens. And fortunately, I was able to get effective treatment. And though it was a tough journey for me, I was able to recover and get help. And that's really why I do the work that I do, because I believe strongly that recovery is possible. And I want to send that message, because when you're in it, it is all consuming and it can feel like there's no other way to live. And the eating disorder really becomes a coping mechanism. But once you can find other healthy ways of dealing with all of those issues, you can go on to lead a healthy, happy, productive life. And it's important for people to have that sense of hope. And also for families who are supporting people who are struggling, it can feel very, very overwhelming and hopeless. You feel helpless. You know, I know that those around me felt that way, but with the right kind of support system and the right kind of treatment, recovery is possible. So I do the work that I do, and I feel very connected to it because of my personal experience.
Girly Nation, if you're in need or know somebody in need of medical attention, please call the toll-free number for the National Eating Disorders Association. It is a confidential helpline open Monday to Friday, and the number is 1-800-931-2237. And there you have it, Girly Nation. That wraps up another episode of the Keep It 100 Girls Show. Hope you enjoyed it. Please tweet you listened to this episode by tagging me on Twitter or Instagram at Nina Babel. Or you know what's even better? You can send me a Snapchat. New episodes of the Keep It 100 Girls Show drop every Tuesday on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. Don't forget to share the show with your girlies. And anybody who has a question or a personal story, send your email to ask@ninababel.com. And you know what? I will feature it on an upcoming show. Give me some love, Girly Nation. Show me your girl hug by subscribing, rating, reviewing my podcast in iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. I'm still the new chick on the iTunes block. So when you rate and review my podcast, here's what happens. You're helping my position in every iTunes category. That means so much to me. You could also check out my videos on YouTube by typing in the search field Nina Babel. Tune into next week's episode, where I'm going to give you the real on the talk. Yeah, the sex talk. Did you ever get the sex talk? Learn what myths, half-truths, or scare tactics were used, and what Girly Nation has to say. Learn one shocking fact. Most women didn't get it. I mean, they didn't receive the sex talk from their mom. Thanks, girl. Smooches.